Hello, and welcome to What is Wrong with Hiring, the podcast where we talk about why hiring people and getting hired are both absolute nightmares. I'm Laura Klein, an angry hiring manager.
And I'm Amy Santee, a jaded yet cautiously hopeful career coach.
So please be advised that this podcast may contain drinking, swearing, and screaming into the abyss, pretty much like most podcasts. So today we are going to talk about kind of hiring. I would say it's hiring adjacent, and it's the kind of thing that certainly makes you have to get hired over and over. We're going to talk about self-employment. So, hey, if you want to hire yourself, I don't know, do you think you'd be a good employee? You've already hired yourself. I fired myself a while ago and got a real job.
Yes, we both have experiences with this from different angles. And remind me, you have been in self-employed and done consulting and stuff over your career, right?
I mean, I've done like almost everything because, again, old, but and very easily distracted by squirrels. So yes, I have been a freelancer. I have been a consultant-ish kind of person. I have worked for an agency doing, you know, like agency work for a small agency. I've done coaching at a larger, it doesn't matter. Yes, the answer is yes, Amy.
Yeah. I mean,
I have done those things. Yes.
I can say the same thing too. And my career hasn't been as long, but yeah, I've kind of bumped around to different roles and different types of engagements. And of course, now I am self-employed and have really embraced that as the place where I feel like I can thrive the most.
Yeah. There are huge benefits and I would say huge drawbacks to being a freelancer, being a contractor. And there are differences in all those business models that I don't think we really need to care about too much. Basically, this is you are getting paid to do the thing that you do for, you know, but not as a full-time employee, right?
Exactly. That's, yeah.
And you're right. Keep getting contracts. Yeah.
Pros and cons to all of these things, whether we call it consulting, freelance, contracting. And I think there are some differences that we don't have to dig into too much, but it comes down to, are you actually building a business with an infrastructure and putting yourself out there and, you know, maybe some marketing? Are you contracting over and over with the same design agency or consulting firm? Right? Are you kind of just jumping onto projects? So yeah, it's pretty interesting and definitely contrasts well with full-time employment, which we have, you know, also done enough of to be able to make that contrast and comparison.
To know all of the things that suck about that too.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I was just gonna say, like, I think there's a lot more folks, and I've seen this during other downturns or, you know, less bad ones than this, but I've seen this during other downturns. People do freelance. They do a lot more freelance when things get rough, when those full-time jobs aren't as thick on the ground. You know, you do more. The weird thing is there's also less freelance work out there, but there's a little bit more than you think sometimes because a lot of those companies that lay people off then sometimes fill in with people who are a little easier to like just bring on for a project. So sometimes it can be an actually good time to get into this if it's something that you're good at doing and kind of have some of the network.
Exactly. And that's what I'm hearing from my friends and peers who run a business or who do freelance work is that their businesses are going fine. They're still getting project work. Some of them are the busiest that they've ever been. I think to your point about layoffs and getting rid of full-time staff, there's still work that needs to be done. And a business might decide, okay, we're going to hire contractors who are kind of like full-time employees and come on for 3, 6, 9, 12 months. And then there's this other idea of freelancers who come on for a very specific project that may last for 2, 4, 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. That first one we often call, you know, cause I love jargon. It's often called team aug or team augmentation.
You know, alternative workforce.
Yes, exactly. Alternative workforce. Yes. The future of work.
Yeah, but, you know, and you do the same work, but you just get paid less.
Well, so we're going to do a whole thing and I don't want to get too deep into this. We're going to do a whole podcast on scoping and pricing for freelancing. Cause as somebody who has dealt with it and screwed it up and seen other people screw it up, and it's the kind of thing that can really bite you if you don't do it right. So we're going to do a whole thing about that. But yes, sometimes you get paid less. Sometimes you get paid way more. Mm-hmm. I will say this. The only thing that I will say about pricing right now is charge more than you think. I know that there are a lot of like things out there that say like charge twice as much or three times as much or whatever. Like, okay, fine. Charge more than you think and factor in things like more taxes and insurance and also all the time that you spend working but not billing, because all the stuff that you do, I always joke about writing books, right? Like that, you know, if you like the actual payment for books, I made like, I don't know, 30 cents an hour on the books. But you know, you get more back in consulting fees and stuff. So
exactly. It really depends on how much you put into it, what kind of reputation and authority you build.
Yeah. Still pretty close to minimum wage on the books. But anyway, we'll talk about that next time. Look, you talk to way more people in general than I do, being friendly. So tell me, which ones of your clients are you telling to do this? Like, how do they know it's right for them to do it?
Many folks who have been inside of companies for a while are dealing with challenges or maybe even getting laid off and asking the question, is this a suitable type of, you know, work for me, essentially? Does it provide me with the kind of life I want to live? Maybe more autonomy is desired, more freedom. How does it ease up on mental health challenges that you might experience inside of work environments that are asking you to do a lot and constantly asking you to do more and more? So I think a lot of folks are contrasting these two options with regard to the essentially autonomy and choice as to what kind of work you want to do and how much you want to work. And a lot of these folks want to have more varied experiences with the type of projects that they're doing. I think there is this question of how do I know it's for me personality-wise, skills-wise, in terms of running the actual business, the administrative, the stuff behind the scenes. And I know this is something that you and I have a little bit different thoughts on. I personally think that social, friendly, engaging folks do really well with this because people like to work with friendly, social, engaging type people a lot of the time. I think it can help too.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree that's true, that it's easier. I just have a really good counterexample in that I was pretty successful as a freelancer and I'm none of those things. So you can basically, like, we can talk through all like the personality and skills and all these kinds of things and like, just think, consider it this way. All of these things will help. Being social, being extroverted, enjoying getting your work out there, speaking, writing, all of these things. These all help, right? In the same way that, you know, people are like, should designers code? Well, you know, maybe. Who knows?
You want to go down that rabbit hole.
I really don't. I've been down it like so many times. But I'm just saying, like, the answer is like sometimes. Like, would it help in some cases? Yes. Would it not help in other cases? Sure. Same thing with all of these things. These will probably be helpful to you. And if you're missing a couple of them, don't go, well, you know, I'm not really that extroverted. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Like, no, there's probably some form of this that would work for you if you're good at all the other stuff.
Absolutely. I think that's a totally fair point. You're right. It might have a lot to do with what the actual work is, right? And so in my career as a UX researcher, that's a huge part of being a researcher, right? Interacting with people and presenting findings, storytelling, you know, even when you get into agency type contracting or running a service business for clients in that more traditional environment, this idea of client experience can be really important, you know, buying plates of pastries in the morning when your clients come into town, right? And, ooh, you know, that's that. And I'm not totally into that necessarily. It's not something that I made it a point to do. But, right, it's about that client experience for a lot of people. But then other folks, it's, you know, you show up, to do the work. You have a very straightforward idea of what it might be. Maybe you're coding some stuff. Maybe you're just working on visual design for things. So I think you're right. It is a question of, is it for me and how can I explore that enough to decide whether I want to go into this full time?
Yeah. Yeah. You also have, you mentioned in our notes, because, you know, we do take notes on this to make sure that we provide a quality podcast. In your notes, you also mentioned things about, you know, organization, being proactive, being, you know, like not minding things like sales and marketing and business development, because, and networking. And I will say this, like, as somebody who does not necessarily enjoy all of those things and is not particularly organized, yes, like, you have to do some of that. Like, those are, like, you can't really get work if you're not doing some form of sales and networking and business development, unless you're incredibly lucky and, I don't know, telepathic and people just know to come to you. Mm-hmm. But most of us don't have that. So you have to do these kinds of things to a certain degree. I do think that you can find ways that work for you, or sometimes you can hire other people to do them, but those are all parts of the business, and this organizational part of it is really huge, and sometimes more than people think. Like, if you are a designer or a researcher or an engineer or whatever, I don't know, llama groomer, because that's what you really dig, like, you might not like doing payroll. So maybe you don't want to hire people to do stuff with you. You might not like doing business development. So maybe freelancing's not for you, or maybe you want to go through an agency, or, and you got to kind of figure out which parts of it will work for you. Because there's the getting the business, there's the doing the work, and then there's all the, like, getting paid for it stuff. And then there's all the, like, taxes and admin and health insurance and other insurance and all of that stuff. So you have to do some of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
All of the work.
Yeah. Yes. And it changes over time, right? Mm-hmm. If you start off freelancing and you have a really solid network, you've worked with a lot of people who you've kept in touch with, maybe you have written a book, maybe you have a blog, maybe you post on LinkedIn, right? If you have done some of that already, you're going to start off more prepared than someone who hasn't really put that together and needs to really start from scratch. And so I think that's what has been helpful for me and for other folks that I know who have that network, who have that reputation out there. And it's just easier to find work. It's easier to have a reputation of doing quality work.
Yeah.
And that's continued even for myself into my coaching practice as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's ongoing.
It's ongoing. Yeah. And it, you know, it changes over time in terms of how much you might spend on each of those activities, right? If you're fully booked for 6 months, then maybe you do a little bit here and there just to maintain it. If you're doing more projects in shorter timeframes more consistently, you're going to, you know, it will look different for different people. Absolutely.
Yeah. I do want to talk about one personality trait that I think is absolutely non-negotiable. You have to have this. Like, you can do all of it. You can do it, you know, with the worst attitude in the world and to, you know, not social or anything. You can. I promise you can. There's one thing you have to be okay with.
And what is that?
That is ambiguity and uncertainty. I guess that's two things. It's kind of the same thing. I don't know. Anyway, mm-hmm. You have to be okay with ambiguity and uncertainty. I'm going to tell you a very quick story. I talked to my dad, who was a lawyer for many, many years. And he was probably in his late 70s and still working as a lawyer when I talked to him about this. And I said, yeah, you know, it's so hard when I'm contracting and consulting, because, you know, it's like, sometimes I've just got all this work and I feel great. And then a project comes to the end. And then I'm like, oh, shit, where's the next one coming from? Like, I don't know. And I'm always just convinced that it's the last project I'll ever get. And he laughed and he said, you know, I've been practicing law for over 50 years. And I'm always convinced that every case, as soon as it's over, I'm never getting another case for the rest of my life. He was a very successful lawyer, kept working until he was 82. Wow. So I'm just saying, maybe that's genetic. I mean, but, like, we both apparently were kind of okay with it because we kept doing it.
You can be.
There is that. Like, there's that nervousness when you get to the end where you're kind of like, is there more work? Like, is that it? Is that the last paycheck I'm ever getting?
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
And don't get me wrong, I have had feelings like that on occasion, But again, it goes back to our first, our point a few minutes ago. If you are maintaining connections, network, building that reputation, it makes it easier, it makes it more likely that when something is coming to an end, that you will have something to pick up on next, or it will happen sooner rather than later, right?
Yeah. And you're doing that biz dev stuff and the networking, you're continuing to, this is a tricky thing, especially for folks who really like to focus on craft and like really like to, you know, to just be sort of single focused. And I get it, but if you're not constantly kind of doing the touching the network and, you know, maybe putting out a blog post or whatever it is that you do to, you know, the newsletter, to the podcast, I don't know, I've never gotten any work from the podcast, but you know, whatever it is, like getting your name out there, unless you keep doing that, people have very short memories and will forget about you immediately. And you will have to start it all over again as soon as that one contract is over.
Yes. Yes. And what about this question of enjoying these things? Do you have to enjoy it? Is it okay to have to do the things and like not really get pleasure or satisfaction out of the business side of things? I don't know. What do you feel?
I don't know, Amy. It's work. Work is That's not true. For fun. Work
no,
is
it's
for,
not.
Work is... yeah, I'm kidding a little bit. Look, I think you'll do it better if you enjoy it, right?
I think so.
If you want to, if you don't have to push yourself to do it, if you don't have to overcome loathing and fear and, you know, like try to find aspects of these things that you don't hate doing, and hire people to do the parts that you really, really can't stand. If you can't do marketing, if you can't do what, like, you can hire people to do that. It's fine. Like, that is not cheating. It is not.
No.
It is fine. And it is probably for the best. So keep that in mind. But yeah, you will do better if you enjoy most of this stuff, with anything, right?
And like, that's really when you get into the realm of running a business, going back to what we talked about initially, freelancer versus small business or consultant, right? What your business looks like big picture, I think is a choice. You can continue working with the same client over and over. Maybe you always contract through a design agency or some other kind of service provider. And maybe it doesn't require you to have to do some of these things. Maybe that also means you don't have your own direct clients. When you start to get into the realm of having direct clients, you know, maybe Fortune 50 companies that you're doing some work for, then there's a lot of additional work that you have to do. Maybe you have to do all of the selling yourself rather than relying on an agency to do the business development and then ask you if you'd like to join a project.
Yeah. Yeah. Or sometimes it's the other way around, because if you're working for very large companies, sometimes like you have to get on the vendor list and you have to like have specific insurance and you have to do all their compliance bullshit. And it just takes a tremendous amount of time. And in those cases, finding somebody who will handle all that for you can be beautiful, because you can make plenty of money working for those large companies and still give away 30% of it to an agency that is making the rest of that nonsense go away. So a consideration. But one of the things I do want to say too is I think a lot of people get hung up on, I remember when I very, very, very first started, I got really hung up on the concept of I had to have business cards, which it was like 2009, so forgive me. But like, it was true. And I was going to a conference and I wanted to get them for them. But like, people get really like focused on like, I have to figure all of this out ahead of time. And you do not. Like, do you have to get an LLC? No. Could you? Should you? Maybe. Sometimes. I worked for a long time as what's called a sole proprietor without one. Is it safer to have one? Probably. But like, you know, it depends on how much risk you're willing to take on. Do you have to decide up front that you definitely want to work through an agency or definitely don't want to work? No, just do it. Just go do the thing and see if you like it or hate it. And there are, you will see things about working for an agency that you're like, oh, that's terrible. You know, like I can't fire my clients and I have to be nice to these people, which is what drove me to freelance in the first place. I like to be able to fire my clients. But on the other hand, then I also had to do all of my own invoicing, which is also not fun. So, you know, pick your poison.
It's great to take an experimentation mindset and an iterative research and design mindset, right? I think it is better, yes, to kind of just jump in, do some due diligence, you know, talk to people who do this kind of work to get a sense for what it could look like, right? And both of us are sharing our experiences and what we know from other people. And there's a whole variety of perspectives on this. But yeah, figure it out over time and do enough hypothesis testing to answer the questions that you have about whether or not you want to continue doing it. Absolutely. Yeah.
One of the things that I actually really like about it is it gives me something to do. So I often do this thing. I almost never quit a job with something else lined up because generally Same. I quit a job because I can't do that job anymore. I'm like, oh, I would rather do literally anything than be here. Yep. So at that point, I'm like, moving on, and I will figure it out later. And so I've actually found the consulting freelancing stuff a really nice thing to be able to kind of come back to, because you can kind of fire up the, like, once you've done it a few times, you can kind of fire up the network. You know, if you're newly laid off, if you're newly kind of going, oh, I don't know, I'm looking for jobs. This is the kind of thing you can also do while you're looking for jobs. Maybe you don't take a full-time thing, but you know, you're making some good money, you're meeting some people, you're staying kind of relevant, you're maybe learning a new project or a new skill. Like, it can be a really good thing to do for a little while, and you don't, again, have to make this big decision that, like, this is my life.
Right.
or you can. And that's great too. Like, both of those approaches are fine. You can be like, this is the thing I want to do, and I want to do it right, and I'm going to do it great. But like, yeah, okay. Also, just go out and like, do it, like try it, see how it goes.
You can change your mind, right?
Yeah, and you can change it later.
My career path essentially was Fortune 50 company, freelance, design agency, freelance, startup. What was after that? Consulting, freelance. And then I went back to a Fortune 50 company. And then I was like, bye. And went back to consulting and then switched into coaching. So I've bounced around all these different places, and it's given me a really holistic perspective on this entire ecosystem of businesses that are working in design and technology. And I changed my mind several times. I never felt concerned about moving between these and how these different types of work might impact my future career. It just felt like the right choice. I paid attention for opportunities. I was loving consulting, even though I had to go through those master service agreement processes and contracting and doing all that stuff. But then a really great opportunity came up for me to go back in-house, work at a company for 2.5 years, learn a ton of stuff, and then decide, yeah, I was too jaded to stay there anymore. So
The paycheck is real nice, though, I will say.
The paycheck is nice. The tech money's nice. The not having to worry about insurance, you know, getting annual bonuses and all of that. There's a lot of really great things. But I think you probably know a lot of people and may have experienced for yourself that working in-house requires a lot of your time, your energy, your soul, right? It really, and so going back to autonomy, I think that's a huge thing, that freedom, that idea that you are not told what to do, but you find the work that you want to do. I think that's a huge reason why people do consider this. And it definitely was something, it was a major reason why I did go back to being a consultant.
I agree. And yet I want to, I'm not going to say no, I'm going to say also,
yes, and
people kind of, yes, but people do sometimes slightly oversell the autonomy part of it. And this is my only concern with this. You're like, oh, I can do it from anywhere. I can go and I can just quit. And it's like, well, okay. But also, like, you kind of, like, especially on longer term contracts, like, you get the contract that you get. And sometimes you don't get to, like, if you have told people that you're going to do stuff for them for the next 6 months, like, you should do that. Like, you can't just stop in the middle. And like I said, sometimes you get like 3 months of nothing or panic and you're busy trying to, like, so can you set it up so that, like, you have lots more freedom and lots of time and you can travel and stuff like that? Yes, but only if you work in a certain way where you're taking on sort of shorter term things and you've got stuff like there are definitely forms of this where that works, but a lot of times it isn't. And the other thing is that, like, remember, you still you still have a boss. Kind of. I mean, it's you. But like, I don't know about you. I can be a total bitch. Like past Laura does the worst things to current Laura. And I will do I will sign future Laura up for shit that I'm like, well, what the hell was she thinking? It is just bad, right? So I'm like, well, that sounds like that might be fun. And then like, you know, 2 months comes along and I'm like, what? No, this was not fun. And you know, you're working with clients and that means that those people are kind of variable sometimes. And sometimes they have weird demands and we'll talk about scoping on the next podcast.
Yes.
And like I said, sometimes you can fire them and sometimes you can't. So just, yes, you have more autonomy to a certain extent, but you still got to, you know, pay your bills and get enough work and you're still working with clients. And sometimes those people are nightmares.
I think now as a coach, I don't have that issue. Yeah. Part of it is that I work with individuals. We work, you know.
You work with nice people.
I do. I work with really amazing people, but I am selective, right? I really am selective about who I work with. And I was also that way, generally speaking, when I was doing UX research consulting. But there were times where I did decide to take on a project, maybe that I wasn't as excited about, or maybe the client for some reason wasn't my favorite person, just to maybe tide myself over financially, to have something to do before I got the next project. So yeah, you know, another thing I did though is ask myself, what kind of client do I really want to work with? And how do I determine if they are that person before signing a contract? And I think it takes a stance of expecting and deserving respect equally. I know a lot of freelancers and design agencies, consultants who kind of assume a role of being a service provider in a more traditional way, where you are serving someone within a hierarchical relationship, and that is fairly common. But I always try to look at it as I'm looking for a partnership to do a project collaboratively. And yes, they tell me what they need, but I can also say, hey, you might also need this, or instead, you need this other thing first. And see if there was a good vibe of respect, good energy before signing on the dotted line.
Yeah. And I'll say that you get there when you're more senior, I think. Like you get there because you learned those skills in-house almost certainly, right? Like it's very hard to do that as a brand new person to the, you know, because you're just like, please give me anything I need to put in my portfolio. And I get that. And it's hard and it sucks and you kind of got to get through it. But you're right. Like you're looking for somebody who's going to bring you in as, you know, the expert, as the person, like you are being brought in to do a thing that they cannot do for whatever reason. And you can, so they should listen to you. And if they don't, then they should pay extra. We haven't talked really about how to get those projects. And I think we should briefly, we talked a little bit about sort of like getting your name out there, like reputation and, you know, don't write a book. That's all I'm saying. But a blog. Blogs are good. You know, post things on LinkedIn. Like, get your name out there. Maybe do some speaking. Those are all great. But, like, that doesn't – none of that pays the bills, especially not the books. But none of that pays the bills. So how do I get that job? It's like somebody – how do I do that? Tell me. I don't remember.
I mean, okay, let's imagine there's someone who decided to quit or they got laid off and they want to go into this type of work. Start with your network, letting them know that you are now a freelancer, you're doing consulting work. Here's what type of work you want to do. Here are the services that you offer, right? So really starting with that, there's this concept of, let's see, what is it? Strong ties and weak ties. So your strong ties are your immediate network. Like imagine your first level connections on LinkedIn, right? The people you know well or have worked with. But then weak ties are the people who are, you know, one or two levels out from that who you don't know, but that person you know will be that common connection. So by letting them know, they may also know of people to connect you with. So I think that is definitely.
Especially people who are also, yeah, especially people who are also freelancers, either in what you do or something adjacent. Like I used to get, when I was doing it all the time, I would get, oh, do you know anybody who does visual design? And I was like, oh yeah, no, actually I know several people who do visual design because I do not. So that was great when I could do that. Or do you know anybody who does X? And it's like, well, not right now. But like if they make sure to tell me, hey, I do this, and like at least I can throw them some, you know, referrals. And it was great for me because I could make a connection with somebody who might later on have something that worked for me.
Yep. I relied on that. I make a lot of those connections still because I just know so many people who are looking for freelancers who are freelancers, right? And that's really kind of fun to actually be able to connect those folks and see those relationships flourish out there. I think there are some other ways of doing this too. Just contacting design agencies that look cool to work with, you know, technology, consulting service providers, letting them know that you're available. Here's my resume. Here's my capabilities, what I'm interested in doing. So there's that. They can put you on their roster. Things like listservs or LinkedIn, right? People post about projects that are coming up that they need a freelancer for. So there are various ways. And I honestly don't think that anyone really needs to do this traditional marketing of, you know, putting ads out or anything like that. I think it really does come down to relationships and niche communities where these, where the type of work you're looking for and people who are looking for someone like you are already hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah. There are also some platforms that if you do a specific kind of work, and you have to be kind of careful with this, but like things like Upwork or TopTal, like sometimes those can get you things. They do tend to take a big chunk and they don't necessarily do as much, but it kind of gets past that. Like when you're applying to jobs, like real, like regular jobs, not real jobs, they're all real jobs, but like full-time jobs, like those are just posted on a website, right? Or like somebody sends you a job description. That often isn't true for project work, but it is on some of these things. But you're competing against a lot of people. It's often kind of a race to the bottom. So, you know, it works for some people. And if you can make it work, more power to you. I'm just saying it exists as a possibility and I wouldn't count on it for a long-term thing. But sometimes, you know, you can pick up a few clients. And if you're looking for something to tide you over while you're interviewing, like, not a bad option.
No, no.
Like, it's not at all. That's a thing, right? Like, if it's, I don't know that I would necessarily build a career on it, but not a bad way to start.
Right, right. You mentioned, you know, don't write a book in order to make this happen. Right. Yeah. You're not going to like make a ton of money from writing maybe a more of a niche book that relates to your particular field of work. Okay. And, you know, that's not the only reason to write a book as well. But I will say that the more of that you do, and doesn't necessarily have to be a book, right? There's different forms of content out there that people are putting out. And it, you know, is a cumulative benefit over time where you're getting your name out there. People know about you. They associate you with some kind of expertise in technology, design, whatever it might be. And you're just more well known over time. So that lays a really solid foundation for you so that it's kind of doing some of that work for you and you're not having to necessarily be as constantly proactive in connecting with people, in getting your name out there.
Oh, I mean, I built my entire early business on blogging and, well, Twitter, RIP Twitter. Not on there anymore, but,
no.
You know, that's where I built a community and an audience and it was fantastic and it worked and I got a lot of, you know, like I've met people and I got my name out and yeah, like you become an expert in things and then you get a little more inbound, which can be nice. There is one kind of writing that you do have to do, which you need, and we're going to talk again, I think we're going to talk about this in more detail in the next podcast. You need to be able to write a proposal.
Oh yes.
And, like I said, we're going to cover this in detail about pricing and proposals and scoping and all of that good stuff, but you have to do some of that. I will tell you right now, contracts are your friend. Get it in writing. Get it written down. Make sure that it's clear. Like, this is not the kind of thing to just kind of go like, yeah, let's give it. Like, I know I just said, let's give it a try. Yeah, let's give it a try on everything except for how much you'll get paid and how much you have to work.
Yes, absolutely. You don't want there to be any ambiguity, right? That really leads to issues. It can lead to not really enjoying the work as much. It can lead to relationships that, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, there are two separate things, and we'll get into it the next time, but you have a proposal, and that is what leads the person to want to hire you. And that is what you mm-hmm. base the contract off of. And it might evolve over that conversation, but the proposal is important because you need to convey to that person that you hear them, you understand what's going on, and you understand what their goal and problem is, and here's how you can help solve that problem. Then you have a conversation, win the work, and then in the contract, yes, being very precise about here's how things are going to go. Here's my responsibilities, your responsibilities. What happens if the scope changes? Like, absolutely get that on paper, signed, sometimes reviewed by an attorney, even depending on the complexity. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to give you my two favorite quotes. I made up neither of them. I don't know who did. Apologies. Freelancing ain't free, and you can die of exposure. Mm. So don't do stuff for exposure. And don't do stuff for free, like unless it's a really, really good cause or you think it's mm-hmm. going to be a hilarious story later. I will do things for free if I think it's going to turn into like a really good anecdote. It's the only time, and very little. look, we're going to talk all about that stuff, though, in the next exciting episode of What Is Wrong With Hiring. But I think that's all the time that we have for today. By the way, if there is a question or topic that you would like us to discuss, reach out to us on LinkedIn. By us, I of course mean Amy, because she will actually respond to you. but please do let us know if there are any questions or topics that you're interested in hearing us talk about. I am Laura.
And I'm Amy.
And we want to thank all of you for listening and wish you all the best of luck with your search. No matter what you're looking for, we're rooting for you.